Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
That podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear those co-hosts shouting, it's Dana and Jay.
Presenting sponsor for today's episode of Hear That Podcast Growling is Visa, a network for everyone. Welcome in, Paul Ener Jr., Jay Morrison of The Athletic here with you. Happy to be here as we enter Steelers week, coming off the loss to the Bears. How are we doing, Jay?
Doing well. Quite a different feeling this week than last week.
Oh, yeah. Just, the pitchforks are out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we knew this is what it was going to be, right? I mean, the first loss, the first bad offensive game, it's going to be a lot of people mad, screaming and yelling. It's going to be a fire the coach year after every L. I mean, it's been fire. It was kind of fire the coach almost after the first win.
Yeah, I thought the coach would be Lou, though, that they wanted fired, and that's not been the case at all.
We will dig into that, Jay, you have a story up from Sunday on the defense and some more on that in your final thoughts and some other interesting things in your final thoughts, including some Jamar Chase history we're going to dig into a little bit. Actually, some really interesting early statistics happening with the Bengals that I think speak to some grander themes that we need to touch on, including a really fascinating one. So this is behind the scenes. We have a new statistics company that we're kind of working with this year at The Athletic, and it is awesome. It has everything you could ever imagine, every filter you could ever think for a game broken down almost immediately after. I'm having so much fun playing with it because I can uncover things like I stumbled onto after writing the story that posted Tuesday on the running game, and it was fascinating look to exactly where the Bengals are inefficient and what is killing them right now. And I couldn't believe I found it when I saw it. I had to like triple check that I did everything right because it was so glaring. So we're going to talk about that with the running game and some QB hits stuff. Things like that. Mo Egger is coming on. We've got a new theme for how we're going to do Mo's segment. We're going to make him talk about his tweets, Jay.
I'm going to enjoy that.
Every week I'm going to go through and pluck two tweets that he has sent and make him discuss them. And I hope that it makes him think twice before he hits send. But actually, I don't actually. I hope he sends even worse ones now just for the sake of knowing I will pull them onto the show.
With my love of stats, I would love to know what the average number of tweets is for Mo in a given week.
Oh, maybe we'll look into that. Maybe you should look into that. That feels like Jay gives himself homework time on the show. So we've got Mo's coming up in a little bit. We're going to talk about play calling a little bit in that
play
scenario.
Play not calling.
We've got a run, pass, or boot. We're going to reveal what happened with the Bengals growler bet. Which did not go the way we thought it would necessarily on Sunday. That and much more. I want to start here, Jay. A reminder to everybody, I have good news for you. The 50% off a subscription for new annual subscribers deal is got extended. So if you missed it and you're mad at yourself, you have more time. You can go and read my story up on the run game, Jay's final thoughts, my story on Jamar Chase and Joe Burrow discussing play calling after the game. Jay, of course, had something on the defense. All that stuff is up there. All the stuff that C. Trent's doing over on the Reds. Justin Williams on UC, who's coming up on one of the biggest games in their recent history against Notre Dame here in a couple of weeks. All of that under one umbrella for a 50% off right now. So go and subscribe. I want to start here, Jay. There's an interesting theme to these first 3 weeks, and it's obvious in some ways in that this was your fear. This was our concern, dude. And that is, this is that the line is just going to get Joe Burrow rocked, and there, you don't know what you're, what do you do? You know, what do? You just do everything you can to try to offset that, whether it's empty, whether it's running a lot and sticking with it, quick game, to try to avoid Burrow taking a ton of hits. You do that, he still takes a ton of hits. And, but the other part is, this is how their first three opponents are constituted. They're all the same. They are defensively strong with really good pass rushes, shaky offense, and they have shaky offensive lines as well. And it's kind of played itself out through the first two games, and Pittsburgh is going to be the same way. Ferocious defense and pass rush. Their offense struggle. Once you get through these first three, I do think it clears a little bit. You know, Jacksonville, we all watch Green Bay on Monday Night Football, not get a ton of pass rush on Detroit, particularly when that game was still in hand. You know, Detroit, all that. I do think the path clears, but it's a matter of can Burrow survive these first three, and the third one being the toughest.
Well, I mean, he made it 10 games last year, and last year it looked a lot worse, but it is, it's, the sacks, the hits, like I mentioned in the walkout on Sunday, it's the cumulative effect. It starts just really wearing on a guy. And so, yeah, if you're going to get them and you get them early and then it kind of clears, maybe that's not such a bad thing, as opposed to, you know, later in the year when you've had a few here and there and then all of a sudden they start ramping up. That's a little more troublesome, but there's no guarantee. Just because the three defenses they face after the first three aren't getting to the quarterback as much as the first three are, it doesn't mean they're not going to get to this quarterback. This offensive line's got issues it has to work through. And the play calling is going to be, if they're going to keep going to empty, it's just going to expose more and more hits. Now that you would think when you go empty, it's quicker passes. You're getting them out and you're not going to get the free runners in most cases. In those situations, and it's going to be more of a, it's not going to be that jarring shot. It's going to be, all hits in football are hard, of course, but it's going to be just getting the pressure up. And as Zach kind of alluded to in his press conference yesterday, what constitutes a hit? Is it a guy that comes up and tries to bat a pass down and slaps the quarterback on the shoulder? Is it taking the quarterback to the ground? It's subjective in some regards with those things, but it does. It all takes a toll and adds up.
Am I going to have to break out last year's scale again?
Yeah, that's right.
The goddams? I mean, it was like, to me, it's how many goddams does he take?
Yeah.
Where it's like, goddamn, you know, and there are plenty of those. And there were more last year in the first two games. You're right. I mean, remember, this started after that Browns game with the same debate, right? How many hits is he really taking? How many is he really hitting him? How many is he kind of getting hit? How many is, you know, is he just getting tapped and they're counting that as a hit? I mean, the bottom line is this, you know, the QB hit rate is the same across the league, and he's getting hit the most per dropback of anybody else. New Orleans is very close. New Orleans is about the same, but every 4.1 dropbacks, Joe Burrow's taking on a QB hit. Now, other quarterbacks have gotten hit more than Burrow. He's tied. There's like four teams tied for third. There's a 20 with the Colts, 17, Ben Roethlisberger up in there, 16 for a bunch of teams. And that's where he is with 16, but he's done it on much fewer dropbacks because they've worked so hard to try to limit that. With the run game in particular and sticking with it a couple of weeks. And so you look at the actual protection and it's not happening. Now, we say offensive line. I mean, the fact that, you know, Taylor kind of said the other day, well, when you set up a receiver screen and the receiver doesn't run the screen, that's not good. That ends in a sack, right? The line is releasing on purpose, and then Burrow suddenly has nowhere to go with it. When you drop back and your running back is right there to pick up a guy in the gap and he whiffs, that's not good, right? I mean, that's a protection thing. And the same thing happened the previous week against Minnesota. Last Minnesota, Samaje Perine whiffs. Against Chicago, Joe Mixon whiffs. Giovanni Bernard. I mean, when people talk about, oh, what is the value of Gio? They needed to move on. Gio didn't whiff often, if ever. And when you have running backs that are out there whiffing, this is the type of stuff that happens. You take on more hits. It doesn't mean the line has been good. It doesn't mean the play calling has been good. It doesn't mean any of that stuff. But, you know, the communication that's happening, the tight ends and the running backs not helping. I mean, they kind of said if there's been nine sacks, it feels like we have nine different people at fault. Well, that's not good. Whose fault is that? You know, whose fault is that if everybody's screwing up?
That's the whole way the offense works, is if one out of the 11 screws up, the play blows up. And so generally that is the case. Rarely do you have the same guy messing up over and over again because he's going to be out of there. But that is concerning that you have nine different guys messing up in the first 2 weeks of the season. Maybe that is good. Maybe it means that that first guy that messed up, that second guy that messed up, hasn't done it again. That's what football coaches say all the time. Don't make the same mistake twice. So let everybody get their mistake out of the way early, and then you see what happens if you have repeat offenders, which I assume we will at some point. I mean, Trey Hopkins, two of those sacks clearly were on him last week. But yeah, it's not good if you have everybody making mistakes, but if everybody makes their one and gets it out of their system, then it's a little different.
That's a rosy view, Jay.
It is.
These just guys are not going to make another mistake the rest of the season. They're getting them all out now. And you know what? We have to be careful. Kind of one of my points in this is we do have to be careful with small sample size. We talked about this last year. There was a ton early, and then they settled down, and you learn, you kind of sometimes have to learn the hard way what you can and can't do. And you hope it doesn't take long, but every team goes through. I mean, there's a lot of quarterbacks taking on a lot of punishment. I mean, half the league has double-digit hits on their quarterback. Burrow was 16 in the QB hit stat. Now the Bengals lead in sack percentage by a little bit. It's too high. He's gotten beat up too much. There's no doubt, but you know, there's a lot of quarterbacks taking punishment. It seems like more probably because most fans aren't watching every snap of every game and scared for the life of their quarterback like Bengals fans are. And it hasn't been good. And the Vikings and the Bears have got after him. And guess what? The Steelers are probably going to make it feel worse. You know, but I do think, you know, last year they found their rhythm with that. They were able to take the pressure off and find ways to move the ball real well and get it downfield and do all those things. You do have to let things play out a little bit. Now, I'm not giving it much more time. I mean, you know, the first couple of games after you get through this first three, you know, Jacksonville, Green Bay, you can't look the same. You know, I'll point to Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks and Danielle Hunter and TJ Watt and Cam Hayward and those guys. But everybody has guys, okay? They might not have those guys. They might not have that success rate, but everybody has some guys. It better start to clear quick. And everybody's learning as they go along early season, particularly now that starters don't really play in the preseason. But it needs to clear itself up fast, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, how many times have we seen Bengal teams go into Pittsburgh and, you know, the game we thought Andy Dalton died on the field where he wasn't getting up. I remember Burrow.
His soul might have left his body that day.
Burrow took a beating in Pittsburgh last year and in Philadelphia last year. So you do worry about that this coming week. But, I mean, there's TJ Watt is a question mark at this point. Maybe they catch a break there. But it does. It feels like it's going to be another game like Sunday, where low scoring, lot of pressure they have to deal with, and it's that they've got to figure out a way to do something, whatever it is, even to help the offensive line, whether it's going less empty, using tight ends to chip, moving Joe around some, more screens, more misdirection, just anything they can to alleviate that pressure, because it's coming and it's going to be coming hot Sunday in Pittsburgh.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor. There's one thing you said here I want to expound on. You mentioned Joe moving around more. Hmm. How comfortable is he doing that right now?
Yeah.
And Joe, I don't think, would ever share this totally honestly with us. And maybe he will. We'll ask on Wednesday. But he does not look like the same willing to scramble, create spontaneous scramble plays guy that we saw last year. Now, to be expected, right? I mean, it's the same way we talked about the first few weeks coming off of in training camp. Trying to find your comfort back there, understanding that it's real, and that wasn't even real. There is an adjustment, a mental adjustment period to being that guy who will hop through the pressure at the line and get out to the outside and try to find and make something happen. We haven't seen that yet, partially because some of the sacks have been so fast and brutal. But I also think he's just not really comfortable doing that just yet and getting out there on the outside and scrambling. I mean, he hasn't run. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't see that. And I think it will come with time. Absolutely. And I think it'll just be something he's going to have to get used to and get over in his head. And he's probably working on it this week, it'd be my guess. But to my eye, that's not something I see, is somebody who's there yet. And that makes it so much harder. Now you have a sitting duck back there a little bit. If you're not really willing to get out of there and try to scramble out of the pressure a little bit more, which is what so many quarterbacks in the league are doing to avoid this stuff, and it makes it harder, and you wonder how long you're gonna fight this battle until Burrow feels a little more comfortable scooting around, wiggling, and scrambling out of the pocket.
Yeah, I asked Zach about it yesterday, and I went back. We don't go back and watch the tape. We go back and listen to the tape, and I regretted it. I phrased it as a compound question, and I said, do you want to get him out of the pocket more, or is this risk management because he's not quite comfortable with the knee yet? And because I phrased it that way, he didn't address the second part of it. He just said, well, we tried to get him out of a pocket, and he named a couple plays where they did put him on the run, and he hit CJ for a couple short passes. But I do wonder that like we saw in the Minnesota game, when that free runner comes and he spins out of the way, that's just self-preservation. And he made a good play. He showed he can do it. But do you want to do it by design? Do you want to expose him? Because you go back, remember that Philadelphia game that may have been the most brutal game of hits he took last year. And so many of those were him running around in the pocket, trying to extend the play. And then the offensive linemen just can't hold their blocks that long. And then there's somebody there to just plaster him. So, you know, maybe that's a part of it right now where maybe Joe's not comfortable, or maybe Zach's not comfortable with having Joe do it just yet. They want to wait a little longer until they know for sure. I mean, obviously the knee is good enough to play, but you want to give it a little more time before he is all the way back, before you start exposing him. Because if you roll him out, like Zach said, you know, Khalil Mack's sitting out there. He's not going to let you move the pocket. You roll his way, and that's bad news. But they have to find a way to do something different. Whether it is misdirection or just the sprint right, where you're not really buying a bunch of time waiting for things. It's just getting out, getting on the run, and kind of negating the other side of the pass rush. You have to figure they're going to adjust and come. Nobody goes into this league and says, this is how we're going to do it, and we're going to do it all year. It ebbs and it flows, and teams learn how to stop certain things, and you have to adjust. And that's what's going to be the test for Zach, is how does he adjust to this and get some of that pressure off of Joe, that you're not going to come up with five new offensive linemen. You got to find other ways to do it scheme-wise.
And choosing, really, I mean, to yeah, exit the pocket. I mean, design is fine and self-preservation is fine, but it's when you have guys in your face coming in, do you choose to scramble out the other way, or do you try to throw around them or throw away, or end up throwing interceptions. You know, I mean, what is your choice when you have that instant to choose, or just going down? You know, and so I think that's part of this. I mean, that's part of this for sure, is willingness to try to keep the play alive and willingness to not just go down. Not that he has a choice on a lot of these that have just been highlight reel type stuff for guys. But I mean, you want to see more of that, at least a little bit in some of these spots to try to create. I mean, that's part of his game. Like, that was his game. That's part of his, what made him the number one overall pick. And he needs time. I totally understand him needing time for that. And I think you've got to be gentle there as far as really encouraging him to do that, because he can only do that on his own mental clock. But, you know, it makes it that much harder when you're taking on a lot of pressure and then you feel like the quarterback's not super willing to dip out of the pocket. And then you watch the rest of the league, and there's Kyler, and there's Lamar, and there's all these other guys, Josh Allen, and maybe their lines are giving up a ton of pressures too. But there they go running around and finding a way to make big plays rather than just taking punishment. And it just, you know, it makes it more a little more complicated. It makes it a little more complicated. You know what else makes it more complicated, Jay?
What's that?
Not taking advantage of the run game when you have opportunities. Because if you're going to take on this idea of we can protect by, look, let's run, our defense is playing really good, and this is going to be an important topic this week, because I think this is going to be a game they're going to have to win like a defensive battle. Old school AFC North style. Think of the War of 1812 game, as it's been referred to back in, you know, 10 years ago, or any number of these brutal Steelers-Bengals battles that end like 16-15 or something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's the type of game they have to win right now against a team like Pittsburgh. And I think their defense has played well enough to prove that they can. But when you get opportunities to run, when the defense allows you to, with a light box, you have to do it. Here's my stats for you, Jay. Paul's got stats today. My turn. Thank you to our new service, True Media. I'm able to filter every run across the league by how many defenders are in the box. And look at the league average and look at individual players. The league average against light box is 5 or 6 defenders, mostly 6, but there's a few of 5 in the box. The league average for yards per carry is understandably high, 5.3. I also have offensive rush success percentage. How consistently is it a successful rush given the situation? It's a formula they use based on every situation. You know, it's a first down on 3rd and 2 is a success. You know, at least a 4-yard run is a success. You know, they judge success percentage, consistency. So you have success percentage. Average success percentage against the light box, 43% is the average in the league. So 43% offensive success percentage, 5.3 yards per carry. Joe Mixon, in 13 carries against the light box for the first 2 weeks, averaging 3 yards per carry and 7.7 success percentage. Nobody is in that vicinity of the guys that have double-digit carries. Here's success percentage amongst those with double-digit carries. Antonio Gibson has 23 against the light box at 43.5. David Montgomery, and he's averaging 5.6 per carry. David Montgomery is averaging over 7 yards per carry against the light box at a 47% success percentage. Clyde Edwards-Helaire actually is less than 3. He's struggled, but he's still at 28.6 success percentage. Singletary in Buffalo, 66.7 success. Jonathan Taylor, 50%. Javonte Williams in Denver, 36%. Daryl Henderson in L.A., 50%. All these up over 4 yards per carry, 5 yards per carry. Zeke Elliott, 60% success, 5.5 yards per carry. These are prominent names and guys that are being utilized. Because how often do you see these guys come up with, they got two plays called the line, right? Light box, audible to the run. Got to take advantage. Got to punish teams in those situations. The Bengals have not. They have been abysmal failures when the defense has dared them to run. You know what they're going to continue to do? Continue to dare them to run and set up to knock Joe Burrow's block off. We talked to Zach Taylor on Monday, and the question was asked of him specifically, what do you want the identity of your offense to be? And he said, quote, that we can build off of our run game and still be able to have an efficient run game that really challenges people so they have to put extra guys in the box, then take advantage of the playmakers we have on the perimeter. That's what he wants the identity of the offense to be, and it's the one thing they're not doing. When the defense sets it up, 13 times now through two games, here, have the run, Joe Mixon. They haven't had the run. They've failed quite miserably compared to the rest of the league. I mean, it's not even close. That is a big problem and one that they've got to fix, because that can take pressure off of your quarterback. That's the whole point of running it more, is that you when you do get this situation, you can take a lot of pressure off your quarterback.
So I'm curious, if you broke it down by week, how many of those 13 runs against light box, was it kind of even, like 6 week 1, 7 week 2, or was it a lot more this past week? Because it did seem like Joe had success in week 1, much more so than this past week.
I did, Jay. Glad you asked me that. Thank you for challenging me. He had 4 carries for 11 yards against the Vikings, against a light box. So 9 for 28. Both bad. Actually was worse against the Vikings. There just were less opportunities. And you wonder if the Bears didn't watch that and were like, I don't know, they light boxed him 4 times. He didn't do anything with it. Let's do that more. Don't put the extra guy down there. Give them the identity that they want to have. We're going to protect against these receivers and dare Joe Mixon to beat us. He's not doing it. And he didn't against the Bears. You wonder if the Steelers will do that even more. I mean, and realize, look, you're not doing your identity. You're not able to execute what you want your identity to be, so we're going to force you to be somebody else and knock Joe Burrow's block off.
I guess the positive side of that is that they did stick with it, that they kept trying. And it almost felt like in that game, you know, it was another hot Sunday. You get late in the game, and they still kept running Joe, and it just felt like if he could – just break one for a decent run, kind of get some momentum going there. But that is, I mean, if Chicago saw that and they're like, well, yeah, we'll go light box. And if he starts beating us, we'll adjust. And he never beat him, so they never had to adjust. I mean, not only is that a very important stat that you came up with, but it's really surprising to me, because I don't think anybody questions how effective a runner Joe Mixon is, and the fact that he is struggling so much against light boxes when he had a good game against Minnesota. So most of his good runs were against a heavier box. I don't know how that plays in, why that's the case.
Is that the case? And that's my question. You know, because you look, he was very good against heavy boxes and average, you know, 7-man in the box, and then up to 8, even 9. I mean, it was very solid. I mean, over 4, that mid-4 range per carry, NFL average success percentage, all of that stuff that you want to see out of your run game, you've seen in every spot except the one where it should be most susceptible. And teams are now daring you. 9 times in a game, the Bears dared them. And you get 28 yards.
Maybe the reason he was successful against the heavier boxes is because in that Minnesota game, the Bengals used a lot more 12 personnel than we've seen since Zach Taylor got here. And maybe that was part of it. You put 2 tight ends out there, all of a sudden, doesn't matter how many they have in the box, you really open up the run game.
Yeah. I mean, certainly. I mean, there's a lot that will go into it, but the bottom line is you can't leave all that out there when, you know, staying in manageable situations, getting momentum for drives on the ground is what offsets the pass rush that's getting to Burrow and ruining stuff. So, you know, it all bakes into part of the problem. It's all part of the issues that they're working through right now, but something to certainly keep an eye on as we go forward against a Pittsburgh team who's been very solid against the run and get after the quarterback. You know, I mean, it's, if they're going to do the same thing, you have to punish them in those spots. If you don't, you end up days look like Sunday against Chicago.
Yep. The age old football adage, take what the defense gives you. If they give you light boxes, you better capitalize.
You better be able to take it. Exactly. So that's an interesting set. I came along. Proud of Jay. I'm proud of myself, Jay. I'm trying. I'm trying to live your life a little bit.
I love True Media. For people that don't know, at the 2020 Combine, they had a demonstration, and Paul and I and a couple other people from The Athletic sat in on it. And I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. And I just kept waiting for the announcement that we'd signed with them, and that it just recently came. So if you guys know how much I love to dig into stats, if you hit me up on Twitter, if you're like, hey, what's the Bengals average in this, or what is that? If you come up with a stat, and I'll look it up. I don't want to give myself homework all the time. I'll let you guys give me some homework.
Yeah. Careful. You just gave yourself homework by doing that.
I'm not saying I'm gonna get to them all.
Keep it up.
Load management, but yeah. I'll pick out the best ones.
Yeah, we can do that. Jay looks up your stat of the week.
Hey,
Jay, give me stats. I mean, I think I'm absolutely, we will, if you send it, we will put that in every week if you guys keep sending Jay stats. Give Jay homework. Give Jay homework. I love it. Let's see. Let's bring in Mo here, right? It's Mo time.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back to some stuff after we get back. But it's time for Mo to talk about his tweets. So let's bring in ESPN 1530's Mo Egger. All right, welcome back into the portion of the program where we bring our good friend from ESPN 1530, Mo Egger. And Mo, I think we have a theme. You know, you can't just have somebody come on the show as a regular segment and not have some sort of, you know, catchy little thing that you do, like a way to theme it.
You so, can. Trust you, me, you can. I can assure you, you can. But go ahead.
But I think I might actually have a good one here. I think every week we're going to bring you on to talk about your tweets.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, because no. And it's not necessarily going to be in a negative way. Many weeks it will be. I'm not gonna lie to you. Like, I play, there's definitely gonna be weeks where we go there. But I just feel like one of them certainly will always be Bengals related. But I think after that, we just go into some of the fun randomness that you like to dive into, or frustration that you maybe send out into the ether, which I also enjoy. I particularly enjoy not watching some UC football game and just checking in on your Twitter to see what the roller coaster of emotions has been like, much like Saturday's was.
And it is a roller coaster. Yeah, there's no denying that.
Watching your fun meter go up and down during Saturday's game on social media was quite an experience.
You're not exactly getting hard-hitting analysis during those games. You know what I mean?
Oh, no. But I appreciate it for that fact. Yeah, I appreciate it for that fact. All right, so here's where we're going to start with today. This is a tweet from during the Bengals game on Sunday. Mm-hmm. An occasional downfield pass would have been nice.
That's a tweet from the walkout when it was 20-3, right before we looked at our phones to realize, wait a minute, they may come back and win this game. But yes, I did tweet that.
And it was fair. Mm-hmm. I'll say this. I mean, it's obvious when you watch it, certainly in the moment. But I mean, you look back on it, how much did you feel almost offended? It's a tough line. It's a tough balance in a lot of ways.
Sure.
Because would you be more offended by throwing a downfield pass or watching Burrow get decapitated in his chest once more? It's like, which is the tougher pill to swallow?
So as stupid as my Twitter is, there is sometimes a strategic element to it where I make a statement that is irrefutable. I didn't say Zach Taylor should have called more downfield throws because I know it's not that simple. And I detest play calling guys. Like, there's nothing worse. We sat by play calling guy at the game in Chicago on Sunday. the guy who's going to, it's 3rd and 8. Here's what they're going to do. Well, no, that's not what they did. So you have no idea what goes into calling a play. So it wasn't a simple Zach Taylor should have called more downfield throws. It wasn't a Joe Burrow should have chosen to throw the ball downfield more. It wasn't, it'd be great if the guys could have gotten open downfield. It was just a, hey, it would have been nice to have a downfield throw to maybe score points and take the Chicago Bears out of what they were doing defensively. So, but yeah, look, what they were doing wasn't working. This high powered explosive offense produced 0 points in the first half, effectively 3 points while the game was still in hand. And so it's one thing if, hey, they're not throwing downfield, but you know what they're doing is working. They're running the ball effectively. They're clicking with the short passing game. Burrow is sharp. Guys are getting separation. Guys are getting yards after the catch. What they were doing with empty backfield, spreading everybody out, which if you're going to go out of your way to protect Joe Burrow, why do you have an empty backfield? That, again, I'm not a play caller, but that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But what they were doing was not working. That was prehistoric offense in this day and age of, you know, we were looking at some of the scores and some of the statistical totals from around the NFL this weekend. And then you look at the Bengals putting up a donut in the first half. How does that happen? How does that happen when we talk all offseason about explosiveness and we got to beat teams downfield and your longest pass play is for 11 yards? That was a reflection of what was happening with the offense. It wasn't a simple, well, you know, hey, they should try to throw the ball downfield for the sake of throwing the ball downfield. It was, they're not scoring. This isn't working. We talked often this offseason about how difficult this team could be to defend. They couldn't look easier to defend. So be more difficult to defend by taking a shot downfield or completing something downfield once you do. And that didn't happen. Now, is part of that on Joe? Sure. Is part of that on a function of what the Bears were doing defensively? I'm sure it was. Is a huge part of that a function of the offensive line being very, very shaky? Yes, absolutely. But you can't deny that on a day in which what they were doing wasn't working, that a shot downfield or two would have been nice to have. It might have changed things. It might have changed the entire complexion of the game.
Everything you just said, like the tweet itself, is irrefutable. But I have a quick question. You say you sent that tweet on the walkout? Did you leave early?
Yeah. Yes. It was 20-3. you have to understand, it had been a little bit of a long weekend. I'd gone to Bloomington for the Bearcat game, driven to Chicago. I was in bed nice and early on Saturday night.
You were not. You were out with us on Saturday night. Yeah.
I strolled through a parking lot before the game and watched all the revelry. And then I went to the game and we had a long drive back. So we had I had two other guys with me. We had to go and get my goal is 20-3. And I said out loud, if you can promise me we will be in Indiana by the time this game ends, let's do it. And well, that wasn't going to happen. But yeah. And the best part of the walkout is our one buddy, Todd, as I look at my phone, and I go, dude, it's 20-17, says to me, well, can we go back? Like, yeah, that's how it works. They just
stroll back in.
Yeah, here we are. So, yeah, I am always opposed to leaving early. I saw the benefits of it. But when it was 20-17, I was in this weird spot of, well, I want them to come back and win. It would be cool as hell if they came back and won, but I'm going to miss it. And then so I'm going to be pissed off about that. What do we do? And obviously it was a moot point because they still lost.
All right, let's just take a quick break. I have a second tweet that you sent this weekend. I believe it was this week. It might have been Friday. But it was a response to one of these things that goes around the internet daily now. That's like, say something about something to prove something. It's like every day. It's like just it's like Mad Libs, internet Mad Libs.
Hey, well, what was one time when you did something?
Yeah, right. That's pretty much every day. Yeah. And so this one was, you said, there was no greater childhood, teenage, early 20s rush for those of a certain age than successfully sneaking past the usher, standing at the top of the ramp to the Riverfront Stadium blue seats. You are not wrong, brother.
No.
And it felt like you needed to concoct a very complicated plan to pull it off. Like there would be, someone would scream in the corner and like act like they, you know, broke their foot, just scream, and just to get the attention and everyone run past the other way. I mean, I can't imagine you would have come up with any of these cockamamie plans.
No, not me. So the tweet was say something that every Reds fan will agree with. And there's a lot of those right now. But I was looking for something a little bit more sort of non-baseball-y. And I guess it's worth describing because Riverfront Stadium has been gone for 19 years now, I guess. So if you're of a certain age, you might not know this, but there are two things. One, the beauty of going to a Reds game back then was ordering by seat color. So you could walk up to the window and say, I would like four red seats, or I would like two green seats. Or if you were an aristocrat and really well-heeled, I would like the blue seats. And that was, you can't do that now. I want lower field box. I mean, it was better to order by color, but on the lower deck, the field level, the seats were blue. You couldn't just go down there. It's not like it is now where you have free reign around the ballpark. So they had these ramps that would take you down to the blue seat, and a guy, usually in his mid to upper 80s, standing at the top of the ramp, and his job was to ensure that there were no scofflaws getting past him down to the blue seats. And so
he took his job pretty seriously too.
Oh, often. And not without much friendliness. There wasn't a lot of, hey man, how's your day going? No, there was, this guy was here to deny people access to the blue seats and nothing else. He was not there for small talk. So it got to be a lot of fun as a teenager and clear into my mid 20s. It got to be sort of a challenge. If you didn't have the blue seat ticket, how are we going to get down there? And after the age of 21, how are we going to get down there to access the blue level bar? Which, you know, as a kid wasn't a big deal. As a kid, it was, well, maybe we can get a foul ball, we can get autographs. And then once I found out about the existence of the blue level bar behind home plate, that's really all I cared about. So there was nothing as exhilarating as figuring out a way to get past the guy. And there were a number of ways to do this. You could save an old ticket stub and sort of just hold it up and hope that he didn't look at the date. You could sometimes find a group of people that clearly had blue level seat tickets and just sort of jump into their group. You could just make a run for it and say, screw it. If I get halfway down the ramp, he's not going to catch me. If he does, he might die. And so there were a lot of ways to do it. My buddy Rich sort of perfected the what's up, my man. And his thing was always like, if you say hi to somebody who's guarding a certain area, they'll assume that you belong. I tested that theory. It didn't work, but he did. And it did. So I thoroughly, that became the game to me that if I said to you, well, I've got yellow level tickets. If you said, yes, I'll come to the game. And by the way, whoever wanted yellow level tickets, I've got yellow level tickets. If you came to the game with me, you knew that at some point, maybe around the third or fourth inning, we were going to try to get past the guy. And sometimes with no success. But when you got past him, there was this Andy Dufresne Shawshank type of feeling that once he's escaped from the prison, you know, that feeling that he had, once you got down to the blue seats, it was exhilarating. And at that point, they couldn't send you back. Like they weren't going to walk around it. Well, I need the yard. Do you belong here? Once you were there, you were in. It was like getting access to an exclusive club. And there's a huge part of me that misses those days.
Yeah. Jay, I mostly wanted to pick this because I'm sure you have 842 stories of the different ways that you plotted and schemed and snuck down into the blue seats.
I do. And a lot were the same as Mo, but I've got two that worked great because the like he said, the ushers were usually older. My go-to move was the old ticket stub, but you were never sure if the guy was going to look at the date or not. So headphones. You put on headphones and just flash a ticket and blow by. And if he says, wait, I need, you just ignore him. You can't hear him. You're listening to the game. You're listening to music or whatever. And you know they're not going to chase you. Because if he goes after you, then 10 other people are going to go down that aren't supposed to. So that worked great. But the ultimate, and this was when I was going, I would go to games by myself, which is kind of sad, but that's what I did. And the parking garage under the stadium, the attendant left an hour after the start of the game time. So you could pull into that parking garage without a parking pass. And they had entrances to the stadium in the parking garage. They had portable turnstiles they set up. And when you went in that way, the ramp took you straight to the blue seats. And so you just go in there and wait. They shut the parking garage down an hour after first pitch, and they shut those gates. But people leave all the time. I never waited more than 2 or 3 minutes for someone to leave the game. And once they leave the game, because those doors are locked, as soon as someone opens the door to leave, you walk in, you go down the ramp, and there is that little bit of, because as soon as you turn the corner, you're walking down a ramp parallel to the one that's coming up from the green seats. So you turn the corner. If there is an usher there, he could check your ticket, but that was never the case. And that was, I did that one night in 2002. That was the only time I ever caught a foul ball. I went down, sat behind home plate in the blue seats. I've had numerous foul balls that I've retrieved. I've caught, dropped, picked up. This was a Sean Casey one, straight up in the air, came down, caught it, let out a huge scream, because catching a line drive is one thing. Catching a foul ball that goes straight up in the air, it picks up a lot of speed coming down. It hurt, but I caught it, and that was one of those sneak in nights. I didn't have a ticket. It wasn't like I bought a red or a green or a yellow seat and snuck down. I just walked in for free an hour after first pitch and walked out with a foul ball.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, I got to say, I would actually think you could do a whole book just on how Jay got down to the blue seats. Like, and it's just every chapter is just a story of a different one and the scheme he pulled. So I appreciate it. But I like it. I plan on finding some much worse tweets from you next week, Mo. We'll make sure we dive a little. Maybe it'll force you to tweet less.
That would be good. That would be good for me. That would be good, I think, for everybody. That'd be good.
I just want you to know, like, when you're looking at the send button, be like, oh, this is going to show up on Monday, isn't it? I just know it. I love it. All right, Mo, thanks for your time.
That was tame by the standard that I feel like I've set. That was tame.
Very tame. I'm easing into this. So, Mo, I will see you for our regular hour on ESPN 1530, 3 o'clock today, right?
No, I told you.
Oh, you're on. You're doing Lance today, aren't you?
I'm on tonight. Yes, I'm on tonight. You can go in.
All right, well, I'll see you some other time then.
You'll be on with Ken Brew.
I'll see you some other time then, Mo.
Looking forward to it.
Have a good one. All right, always good to bring in Mo. We will talk to Mo again next Tuesday as we go through this all season and grill Mo about his tweets and get Jay's stories of using headphones to get past the guys at the blue seats. I mean, you've got a scheme for everything. I always appreciate that. Really, I'd like to have just Jay's favorite scheme of the week. We can just go through some of your old stories, but I don't want to get you in trouble. Some of them, there's probably still lawsuits pending.
I had a great one to sneak into the diamond seats at GABP, but that one was squelched. That one is no longer possible.
No. Oh, so you made them realize that they need an extra level of defense against something.
It was common sense. I think they just were late to stumble onto it. I'll tell you real quick. Here's
come
what
on.
For a friend of mine had diamond seats, so he takes me to the game. They smoke, so we leave to go out in the parking garage, and they have their cigarettes, and they put a white wristband on us. And so I was like, so what do they do? Change the wristband every game? And he's like, nope, they've been using these white ones all year. So I was like, ding, 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 ding. I cut mine off, and I would just tape it back on every game. I made sure to get the doorman's name. It was Chris at the time. So I would walk in through the parking garage like I was coming in from a smoke and say, hey, Chris, how you doing? Shake his hand, walk right into the Diamond Club with my white wristband on. Amazing. I didn't fleece them. I did not fleece them for free food and free drink. I just did it to have the good seats. But I went back, the first game I went back to the following year, I was walking through the parking garage and I saw some other people out there smoking and they had gray wristbands and I knew the jig was up.
Busted. I love it though. I love it. There's always something. We've got a little, speaking of, there's always something in your final thoughts. You have a little bit more on Ja'Marr Chase. We spend a lot of time freaking out after losses. It's worth talking about, you know, at this point, that the explosion they did hope to get from Ja'Marr Chase, though, we've now seen twice. They've now equaled their total number of touchdown, of 20-plus yard passes and the touchdown passes of all of last year. And Chase has done it in back-to-back weeks, and that's not something we've seen often.
Yeah, and people forget that everybody was talking about why didn't they throw it down the field more, and Zach said, well, we did. There were a couple more that didn't hit. They had one. Ja'Marr Chase was behind the defender. He was open down the left sideline, and Burrow, because of the pressure, didn't get it off it was a poor ball. It was well out of bounds. It looked like some of the old AJ, Andy to AJ ones where there was no chance. It was just so far out of bounds. But he got the 42-yarder. He's got touchdown now, a 50-yarder and a 42-yarder in his first two games. So I was curious how many players have done that? How many players have caught a touchdown pass in their first two games? And it's up in the 30 range. Where he can really make history is if he can do it this week. Going back, he is in Bengals history. It's only him and AJ Green have done it. Touchdown catch in the first two games. But I went back and looked for NFL wide since the 1970 merger. How many guys have done it in three straight games? And there are eight. So Jamar Chase would be the ninth. And I had never heard of Charlie Brown. He was a Washington wide receiver. He caught a touchdown in his first five NFL games. And then you have Martavis Bryant and Dante Stallworth did it in their first four. And then Daryl Turner, Lewis Lips, Andre Davis, Chancey Stuckey, and Terry McLaurin all did it in their first three. So that's the company Jamar Chase can join if he can get in the end zone Sunday at Pittsburgh.
I'd like to point out that we've had a Lewis Lips reference for two straight weeks.
Yes.
I mean, this is something. I mean, I'm going to have to. I mean, it's Steelers week too, so I'm assuming we're going to get another one next week. I actually think we should try to get Lewis Lips on at this point. I mean, it's stunning.
He had a great start to his career, and that's last week we were talking about his most yards in a debut. So yes. He's not only got the yards, he's got the touchdowns.
Yeah. I want to update the Bengals growler bet from last week. We did a total passing yard differential between Joe Burrow and Andy Dalton, and there were no winners. It was plus 151 since Dalton left injured and only had 56 yards compared to 207 for Burrow. So plus 151. I'd like to point out that, first of all, there were a lot of big numbers. I was surprised how many people were actually in that area of plus 151. None that deserve us so close, but still up in that area. Not a single soul picked plus Andy Dalton. No faith in Big Red. No faith in you guys that Dalton was going to come out and have a big day at all. So no winners in the Bengals growler bet, except who, Jay? Me.
Yeah, Paul won. Paul beat me.
I win in that Bengals growler bet. Of course, we'll be hearing from Mark Coboli on Thursday's podcast as we go a little bit deeper diving into Pittsburgh and what to expect from the Steelers, who lost to the Raiders 26-17 in their home opener on Sunday. And there's all kinds of problems. They've got a bunch of injuries. Everybody's thinking doom and gloom. Their offense has been pretty bad for a couple weeks. The offensive line has looked maybe worse than the Bengals, which is saying something. So there is a lot to break down between these two teams, who might be probably maybe more similar to each other than either one would like to think.
That's Bengal fan favorite Mark Coboli.
Oh,
we'll be talking to.
I'm trying to figure out how many people were like, well, I'm not listening on Thursday.
you can hate listen. I mean, still join in. Yes. Maybe he'll say something.
It's good information. It's good information.
Oh, for sure.
There is no doubt. I do have a run, pass, or boot before we go, Jay.
Okay.
As to whet the appetite for Thursday's show. You know, the Ravens were supposed to be the team that's going to be, it's just the year of injury for them, and it's going to doom them. And then they beat the Chiefs on Sunday night in impressive fashion. Thanks to Lamar Jackson and his flip and a number of other things.
And a fumble.
And the Browns, we know what they are. I mean, they were right there with the Chiefs and then get an expected win against the Texans. And, you know, we know what the Steelers can be. And I already have a win against the Bills in Buffalo. How many division wins will the Bengals get in 2021? Of course, six opportunities. The options are 0 or 1, 2 or 3+, 3 or more.
I was on the 2-4, 3-3 train early before the season started, and there's really nothing to change my mind so far. But that makes it hard because 2 is one thing and 3 is another. I'll run with 2, pass on 3 or more, and boot 0 or 1.
I mean, it's going to be a big deal whether they can or not. And I mean, even last year, and I think the gap has at least closed some. I mean, you look, they have a win against Pittsburgh. They should have beat the Browns the second time in the Donovan Peoples-Jones over Darius Phillips game. You know, you're right there. You feel like you're better. So I tend to think that you're right in running with two. I just, you know, to me, the question is, what are you passing on? You 3 or 0 to 1?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I think Pittsburgh is going to be a telling one. But I'm going to pass on 0 to 1. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't. This is kind of me going against my own advice to bet against Joe Burrow, but I'm gonna boot 3+. The division is just so tough. The division is so tough, and you just look what the Ravens have been and what Lamar Jackson has historically done to the Bengals. Even though they had some success bottling him up after his injury last year in Baltimore, I mean, it just seems like it's going to be an uphill battle in this division. It's just tough.
Yeah, I mean, they broke the Pittsburgh curse last year. You mentioned it, the Donovan Peoples-Jones, they're one throw like that away from beating Cleveland. From what we've seen early this year, the games against the Ravens could look like the Bengals-Browns games last year, where they're just wild shootouts, as opposed to what it looked like last year with the Baltimore defense just destroying this Bengals offensive line and getting to Burrow in that first game, and then just the domination in the second game. I could see them splitting all three of those games. I don't think there's a team in this division that you say no chance they're not going to beat them. It's a definite 0-2. So, a split with all three teams gets you to 3-3. I think any Bengal fan would take that at this point.
Oh my goodness, yeah, absolutely they would. Three division wins. Hasn't been a whole lot of that happened in the last couple of years.
No.
I 2-4 feels right though. Like 2-4 just feels like where this thing ends up. But so we'll obviously talk a lot more about the division and the Pittsburgh Steelers on Thursday. As mentioned, we'll have Mark Caboli, and we'll have a couple of days of interviews to react to. Including talking to Joe Burrow and Zach Taylor again on Wednesday. So keep an eye out for all of that. Again, reminder, you can go and subscribe. Our 50% off deal has continued. Just go to any of our links. You can go find us on Twitter. Just go to theathletic.com and go to our Bengals stories. And you can subscribe there and get 50% off for the next year. Highly recommend it. All right. That'll wrap us up. Thanks to everybody for listening. And we will talk to you next time. We hear that podcast growl. Have a good one, everybody.